Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. Today, I'm joined by Nick Allen of the Scorecard Review. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for having me.
And, on today's episode, we'll be probing a genre of filmmaking that first emerged from the micro-budget realm and ended up soaring to the heights of the box office charts. Three of the most successful mainstream releases of 2012 fell under the category of the found footage genre. The Devil Inside, Project X, and Chronicle, those were those three. And these films were all shot to resemble, as you know, Nick, video recordings made by the characters themselves, complete with shaky cam cinematography and dialogue delivered directly into the lens. Now, the overwhelmingly gruesome 1980 Italian horror film Cannibal Holocaust is often credited for starting the genre, but In my opinion, it's not a pure found footage film because, you know, the camera just keeps cutting back to the people watching the footage, and so it just kind of breaks up the, you know, narrative audacity. So it wasn't until 1999's The Blair Witch Project that the storytelling style truly was embraced by the mainstream. And whereas Cannibal Holocaust is merely, you know, just grisly and disgusting, Blair Witch really was genuinely unsettling in its minimalism, in my opinion. So to you, Nick, what makes a pure found footage film?
Well, there is certainly an element of a home movies kind of element, I've realized, where it's basically the idea where studios have like this box of these film reels and they're like, oh, this really cool thing happened. You guys got to see this, and we'll try to pass it off as real. A pure found footage film is certainly one that you try to completely be enveloped in, and there's no almost like you say breaking the narrative audacity. There's none of that where it seems completely unnatural.
You know, because that's what I was thinking, is that the whole conceit of this is we want this to feel like it was just found. So
right.
So we're not going to heavily script the dialogue.
Right.
We're going to make this basically just give the actors an outline, kind of work with that, and try to get as naturalistic of chemistry. But does the style, by and large, do you find it absorbing or a distraction?
I think it can be absorbing in style because it is down to aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can create as a natural aesthetic as in Paranormal Activity. That is an absorbing movie because even the idea of the found footage concept is a part of the plot, so it becomes a believable part of it. Whereas later on in these found footage films, it kind of becomes, the story becomes indifferent to the idea of cameras and editing. For example, Chronicle, there's no way that movie could have been edited together in actuality because it's based off many different cameras that are used in the process. Or The Devil Inside is another one where there's really no possibility that actually could have been edited, so it kind of takes away from the believability and the immersiveness of it. But I think found footage films certainly can be, because they have that realism, they can certainly allow you to kind of get into this world, into these characters in a way that is, again, like supposed to be very familiar and very subtle, but still have, but then add the kind of event quality to these movies where it's you know, it's supposed to resemble your real boring life, and you know, these not, you know, these non-actors supposed to be like plain characters, but then something strange happens to them, as in with Paranormal Activity or with Chronicle. So I think it also just comes down to script too. I mean, that's still the core thing, where if the script is not good, it's still going to take people out, and that happens for any type of movie.
Yeah.
But found footage certainly, where it's kind of gambling on that, where it's kind of gambling on the idea that people will go along with this, especially in the beginning of many movies, including Devil Inside and Paranormal Activity, where they throw in this disclaimer at the beginning saying, like, you know, studios, blankety blank studios would like to thank, you know, the family for giving us this footage.
That's right. And now those just get like derisive laughs, whereas back with Blair Witch, there actually were some people who believed, least initially,
right,
that this was real.
That's a good point, because that was, that was 99, 97?
It was 99, yeah.
99, yeah. So think about that, when that was a movie people were really believing, I felt. And think about the impact that definitely had for that movie. Whereas nowadays, it's everyone's just like, oh, it's just another movie where they got a guy to, an actor to film inside the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. Certainly, it's grown from that.
Well, and that's why I picked the subject for independent cinema, because it really has its roots in it. I mean, and The Blair Witch Project is a very polarizing film. Some people look at it and they just say it's a glorified YouTube video. But for me, I mean, I don't know. When I watched it, and again, I was young when I first saw it, but I've had the same experience every time I return to it. It really does grab you. It really does hold you. And it really is, it's one of the most interestingly unstructured of these films, because I talked with actually the co-director, Eduardo Sanchez, and he told me about how he wrote an outline, handed it to the actors and said, these are the points you have to hit. This is where you have to go in the forest. These things might happen, something might happen, but just bunk here for a night and let's see. Wow. And the scariest moment in that film for me, it's completely minimalistic. I mean, it's completely, you see absolutely nothing except they're turning on the cameras in the tent because they hear a noise, and they hear the voices of children outside the tent. And all of a sudden, the tent starts shaking. And then they just run out, and they're just freaked out. And that is, it's so nightmare-inducing, because it's playing completely on the imagination. And when I talked to Eduardo, he said, well, basically all we did was we ran at the tent with boomboxes, with our children's voices remixed on the boombox, and then we just proceeded to shake the tent, you know, with the actors. And they had someone, I think they had someone dressed as like a ghost, like all in like white pantyhose or something, like just somewhere in the forest. And when I think Heather Donahue, the lead actress, looks at it, she's like, oh, no, what's that? You know?
Wow.
So, but and you never even see it in the film, but it was just all constructed to create that natural feeling. And you buy it, at least for me. Yes. I really buy it.
Movie magic right
it,
there.
It does. It does. But it does. But I think you really have to be kept within the reality of the film. Even if it's chronicle, even if it's fantasy, you have to be kept within the rules of
right.
it. And I think the thing that will always take you out of a bad found footage movie is a really kind of lame or kind of half-assed motivation for keeping the camera rolling.
Right.
That's the thing. They have to always think of a good defense. And in Blair Witch, the best thing was Joshua Leonard, who is one of the three filmmakers,
right.
came up with that great line where he talks to Heather and he says, you know, it was something to the degree of, you know, you look through the camera because it's basically your defense shield. It's like it's like the more scared you are, the more you have to look through the lens to kind of detach yourself, disassociate yourself from the horrors that you're looking at. And I thought that was it really is a great work. But what do you think? I mean, there's been some films that have been a little lame on
that. That is certainly, again, we're talking about kind of the growth of found footage films or the kind of implosion of found footage films, where nowadays with Project X, it's just keep the camera rolling, bro.
Yeah.
It seriously is. There's no reason for a movie like that to be a found footage except for the gimmick of it, and then for the characters to say, we want to document this. No one's going to believe this.
Uh-huh.
So it goes back into kind of now found footage movies are just the events, basically, I feel. But that is certainly interesting that Blair Witch actually had a real reason. I don't even think in Paranormal Activity they had all that much reason to keep the camera going that long.
He's just a total douche.
He's such a total yeah.
I mean, it's almost like you could say it's just about a very dysfunctional relationship.
It absolutely is about not shacking up with the girl who has her demons.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
And emotionally.
Absolutely. And he always has to control. He's the man in the relationship.
Yeah.
He has the pants in the relationship. He's going to film this and prove that he can tackle it, even if it's something completely out of his reach.
Right.
And it's almost kind of, it's a perfect comeuppance sort of at the end.
It comes down, again, I think, I mean, found footage, as much as one springs into reality, it still cannot beat the power of the script or a good script.
Mm-hmm.
And you still need good characters, and you still need believable events. So in Paranormal Activity, when weird things are happening at night and he doesn't turn the light on,
mm-hmm.
that kind of takes it out for me, because if I was in that house, that strange, you know, those strange shines of night, I would certainly be turning the lights on and in some hope that these demons were afraid of light or something, or electricity. I have no idea. But.
Well, see, that's a good point, because they make it so much like you're just watching someone's home movies that you become even more judgmental of the characters if it was just, you know, if it wasn't just like a traditional thing where it's like, I wouldn't have done that. But again, you sort of have to take it, you know, as it is. And with Chronicle, what I love about, you know, we want to go back to the, you know, the motivations for keeping the camera on. Dane DeHaan, who I think he's a terrific actor. If you've seen him on HBO's In Treatment, he's a fabulous young actor. And I thought it really kind of got to the psyche of a loner, an alienated kid. He needs to have a friend. It's basically that's his friend at school. And then it just becomes his way of logging. And so he becomes more of a narcissistic relationship. And I thought that was so much more interesting than something like Cloverfield, where, you know, you're basically being chased by a monster that's as tall as a skyscraper. And it's just, you know, it's like, would you really keep a camera on when you're trying to outrun this thing that's like...
Maybe if it was that incredible, I guess, above.
Know.
No, but I do want to give Chronicle a lot of credit, because there have been these three found footage movies, you know, Chronicle, Double Inside, and Project X. And Chronicle is definitely the most successful one. Also, the way it pioneers a new way to keep the camera rolling physically, where it has the camera floating around him.
Yes, which
is a very clever way to both use the superhero element.
Because he can levitate objects.
Exactly right.
And so it gives you a great, intriguing motivation for the steady camera.
Right. And it also allows for coverage shots and, you know, shots you wouldn't normally get from a movie that's supposedly found footage. Mm-hmm. So I give Chronicle a lot of kudos for that, at least for the idea of kind of advancing the... saying there's still some potential
within the
box of the found footage, but at other points still it kind of stays contained, I feel.
And I know we don't want to spend too much time on this film, but The Devil Inside, which was a huge hit, even though it's infamously scored an F on CinemaScore, which I don't know how valid those scores are, but at least it gives you some indication there was a lot of vitriol against that film. And this is what I think, because I think with any successful film, no matter, you know, any successful found footage film, at least, any, you know, thing that really connects with an audience, it all started with the internet. It all starts with the online marketing. And even though Blair Witch was made for far under $1 million, it's been reportedly, it was marketed for, I think, like $25 million.
Right.
I think what went into the marketing campaign. And they had this wonderful, intricate, complex website where it got you into the mythology of this character, the myth of the Blair Witch. So the people are already kind of tuned in. They're connected to the story before they've entered the theater.
Right.
And same with Chronicle. Chronicle had a very unique, interesting web, you know, marketing campaign before it happened. I didn't even hear of it, but the people who did showed up opening weekend.
Sure.
With Devil Inside, I think this is probably the first film that has the film come first and then the website. Because the thing that people were really angry about, it was very mishandled in the marketing, was that it ends very abruptly and then you get a link
So
you get a very unsatisfying ending. You've paid your tickets, and then you get no real, you know, payoff. And then visit our website for more information. I mean, that made people so angry.
Oh yeah. Well, I think the ending itself, which we don't have to ruin, but I mean that type of, which really violates the potential of, or really stretches how much you can just take a found footage concept where, you know, the camera's with these characters and that's it.
Yeah.
So. But I think it is interesting that found footage probably, I can't think of many other genres that really benefit from this mystery box mystery to kind of go in the Abrams way, especially Cloverfield. I mean, can you remember all of that?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just teaser trailers, that was websites and all this other.
Probably
really
the best teaser trailer I've seen for one of these films. I had a lot of issues with the actual film, but it was marketed. It was marketed brilliantly.
It was certainly made to be the ultimate movie to see opening weekend. And that's what these movies have a lot of, because they are experiences, because they are something that you want to literally experience and act and feel like you were there for. So Project X was made to be like, there's this party going on, the movie theaters, guys, and you guys have to be there this weekend. Mm-hmm. So it was, it's interesting, and there's still that, and it has, you know, a very anonymous name, Project X.
Yeah.
And so they really work off this mystery.
Yes, and they really want to play in the online marketing, too, because the trailer for that film, if you recall, has actual, I think it's like tweets, or it's like Facebook statuses of random people saying, this is like super bad on steroids. And seriously, I'm turned off anytime it says on steroids on a pull quote. I just like, what does that
mean? Especially from a Twitter user.
I don't know what that means. So and basically there are these films, because I know in Project X, you know, House Catches Fire, you know, there are some elaborate effects. How effective do you think these found footage films are when they try to synthesize digital effects, you know, with a documentary aesthetic? And we can connect that even to District 9, which isn't technically, you know, found footage film, but it has that documentary shaky cam and the visual effect. Have you seen that done effectively?
I would say not completely clean. I'd like to bring up Chronicle as an example of this, because it's a found footage that has superheroes, but it has to kind of build up this concept of superheroes.
It's an origin story meets Carrie type of thing.
Yeah, it is. Well said. Yeah. It is. So it has to use all of these effects in the beginning to kind of show how these powers are happening. And, you know, he'll like make a stack of Pringles, I think, or something like that. And
they really try to make it realistic. I don't want to go too much on a tangent, but I do love how they make it so realistic of this is how these kids would use it. They wouldn't be, you know, take the high road immediately like Peter Parker and say, I'm going to make, you know, world peace. No, they're just going to freak out people by moving their cars in parking lots. It's done extremely well in the first act.
In the story, I would say with the effects, though, there's certainly some leakage of kind of YouTube level, you know.
What in particular?
If I can remember... There's a scene in the second act when he's at a talent show. He's trying to become the cool kid in school.
Sure.
So he's juggling, and he's doing all these various tricks, and there's juggling. And even the balls that he was juggling, I think they were balls. They looked very fake. So there was just that type of, where the budget of Chronicle had kind of bitten it in the keister, so to speak, by making it a little non-believable, which is very funny about Chronicle, because the third act, to me, is pretty exciting, because it becomes a superhero movie with big effects.
Yeah.
And they're blowing up South Africa, you know, which is where they shot it.
Exactly.
And there's, you know, there's buses flying and so forth.
On a $15 million budget, it's very impressive on that. But again, you have to look at it as a viewer, regardless of the budget. And is this convincing?
I still think there's still a lot of, I mean, maybe Cloverfield's probably the better example of working the shit. So you have like a shaky cam trying to capture something, and then, you know, you get a one glimpse of the Cloverfield monster.
Yes, which looks like a hodgepodge of every monster imagined. It's something like something that came out of a monster garbage disposal,
that's,
you know.
That's all Abrams, you know, I'm sure.
With Chronicle, I thought that there were some effects in that film that did hit the mark, and I think there were some that were in camera, actually. Like, I heard when Dane DeHaan is crushing the car, That was actually an in-camera effect of like a car imploding somehow. So that's like, I think filmmakers should try to find more creative ways of, you know, making the effects happen in camera as opposed to having just all the digital, because we're so used to digital. We know immediately when something's digital. I saw The Gray the other night and I thought that was a terrific film, but I mean, just those animated wolves, just you want them to turn into Taylor Lautner, like, all, you know, it's just, that's what happens. So anyways, a bit of a tangent there.
No,
but I want to talk about, because you saw Paranormal Activity for the first time last night.
I did.
Okay. Because I want to know, the main thing that these films try to do is scare you. There are the tangents, there's the Project X, but mainly these films were in the, you know, Blair Witch tradition. These films want to scare you. What type of found footage film do you find the most unsettling? And have you ever felt frightened during a found footage film?
That's a good question. Paranormal Activity created some unsettlement. But looking at what I have seen, found footage was not, which is not every one of them, so I might be missing something.
But you've seen, so.
But I have not, I haven't seen Wreck, but I would throw Quarantine in something. But that just clearly had a disturbing image for me.
Okay.
So that wasn't entirely frightening, but more just the idea that, oh, this image of the last few minutes of Quarantine is now not going to leave my brain for a couple of years. That kind
So it was effective enough.
Scary. Yeah.
So in Quarantine, because I've seen Wreck and you've seen Quarantine, so we haven't seen the other. but that was a similar type of thing where it's a very long, gradual build up to this moment.
Right.
And it does, at least in the original, it does deliver the goods, but you'd say it also does in the remake.
For me, as somebody who can and certainly feel tension from horror movies, but it's worse when I just feel disturbed by them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like clicking on the wrong website or something. And, and for a Quarantine, just the image of what they had led up to was just kind of really eerie, but also, again, like kind of like painfully disturbing.
Sure. Well, I think that it's very interesting to see the progression of these films and how they've gone about frightening people, because it's very different methods. Because in Blair Witch, it's all shaky. You don't know what you're looking at. There's a lot of dark screen. It really plays directly on your mind. In Paranormal Activity, you are never, it's really, the image is never really obscured. You are always looking at that bed and you're looking down that hallway. And anyone who's ever had a bed that's facing a hallway will know, you know, on nights where you might feel a little jittery.
Shut the door.
Exactly. I mean, you should just shut the door. You should just break the door off the hinges. But it's like you will find yourself obsessing over every little shadow, every little movement. And I think Oren Peli, the director, I thought the best thing he does in that film is just find those subtle movements that just get under your skin. And it's never really the jump moments in that film. Like, I feel like the weaker films, they just put in the loud special effects to, you know, sound effects to boom at you. It's really the quiet moments in Paranormal Activity. And the scariest image for me, the singular image, is Katie standing over the bed looking at Mika.
The second time or the first time?
Well, it's basically when she's just standing there and all of a sudden the time code, because see the time code in the video the whole time, and all of a sudden it just starts speeding. And it's almost like the time code is your pulse. And the more it's speeding, the more you're like, what is going on in her head? What's going on? And it really, you know, plays into the paranoia of like a young couple. they're living together for the first time, they're in a house together, they're in an apartment together. Anyway, it's tapping into that universal paranoia that you don't know your partner, you don't know your girlfriend, your boyfriend as well as you want to. Right. And then there's that nightmare of them just standing over the bed. I mean, really, that's scarier than any just kind of manufactured stuff to me. That was the one moment in that film that really got to me.
Oh, there were certainly some unsettling moments, and it kind of goes with the stillness of the image, certainly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the beginning of Caché, which is my go-to when it comes
to
this.
Sure, Caché, great
where
film.
Where it's just it's just that still shot. Mm-hmm. It's like opening credits, mm-hmm. but it's still unsettling because why are we watching this shot for so long?
And yes, and then the ending, too. And then the ending shot, which mirrors right. that too. Like what's the detail that's right. hidden within this? And that's exactly it, because it makes you so paranoid. And I think the problem with the subsequent Paranormal Activity films, even though they've had their moments, I think they just try too hard. It's like it's too much cutting. Now we're gonna have multiple cameras. We won't just have the one camera setup. We'll have multiple cameras, and then it just breaks up the tension. It really, because then you're just looking at now we're just looking at surveillance.
Did they
footage.
Sell out basically?
Well, I don't know if they did sell out. I don't know.
I mean, it's still Oren Peli, so part of them. Thankfully,
it isn't as pure, I guess, than just the one camera setup. You need the bigger is better mentality for. You know, a franchise, so they feel like they have to do it. But I mean, because there's a great moment in Paranormal Activity, the first one, where this girl is dragged down the hallway, and that is incredibly scary because it looks perfect. I think for me, I thought that was a very, very well done effect.
Yeah.
In Paranormal Activity 2, a lady's dragged down the hallway, down the stairs, almost out the door, and then it just becomes a running gag. And I was just like, okay, now we're just looking at a special effects exercise.
Sure.
And not a story. The good thing about Paranormal Activity 3, I thought, was they had an oscillating fan. That
I
was
heard
the
about
one
this,
good
yeah.
idea where you start to see something happening on this side of the screen, but then it pans before you see
right.
what's happening. Then it just builds a suspense of what's going on until you get
right.
to the rest of the pan.
Just the conversation, basically.
Yeah.
the
yeah.
end of the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And then Apollo 18. I don't know if you
I did not see
okay.
Apollo 18.
Because Apollo 18 was very hated by a lot of people. I agree. I don't think it quite works. But I thought it was interesting how they tried to create tension with too much editing. Like, it's very choppy. It really uses all different kinds of footage, archival footage, you know, handheld footage. And it almost tries to create a tension in the editing where it just goes really, really fast. You're not really exactly sure where you are, where you stand. And so that was interesting. And I don't know if you see Silent House, the Elizabeth Olsen film.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they do something in Silent House that's kind of a pale imitation of what they did in Apollo 18, which I think was the scariest moment in the film, where this guy's trying to light his pathway. He's like walking to a cave or something, and he can only use a flash bulb. So you're just getting those little strobe images, and then it just like the image just burns on your brain, and of course eventually you're going to see a monster pop out, and so the monster is going to burn into a hole
sure.
in your eye sockets. And I don't know, I thought that was a cool concept, but again, it's all different approaches. It's obscured images, still images, or editing. You can go any way really with this.
I think it's interesting when because we're talking about Paranormal Activity and how it seems to be going into kind of horror conventions,
mm-hmm.
and how the found footage is starting to blend eventually into just meeting kind of horror expectations.
Yeah,
we're talking about this flashbulb thing, which happens in Silent House,
mm-hmm.
And it's happened certainly before.
If anything,
it's
sure.
just a good.
Oh,
it's just,
sure.
You know,
oh, yes.
We don't have to get into Rear Window.
Yeah,
but, I mean,
exactly.
but I'm just saying, like, it's, at least for I haven't seen it for a while, so it's nice to see it again, I guess.
Yeah.
But
it's just the conceit of now we're going to be Jimmy Stewart in the wheelchair in Rear Window. Now we're actually going to see Raymond Burr coming at us. You know,
right.
that's basically what they
right.
want to do. So yeah, and I guess again, if we want to, just kind of overall what makes these films effective, it really is, no matter what the stylistic conceit, it really does come down to the story, as you said.
Absolutely.
And the script. And do we believe these characters? Do we believe
yes.
the experience that these characters are going through?
And do we care about the characters?
Yes.
I think that's very important for
mm-hmm.
these found footage films. Not to interrupt you,
No.
Devil Inside is a perfect example of you do not care about these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so important, especially for something you're supposed to feel you're witnessing, personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be a personal experience for you. And if you don't care about them, then you completely have lost it, I believe. More than just in a regular script.
Absolutely.
Found footage is much worse.
Yeah, and you have to credit the actors, and you have to credit the director for creating those genuine moments. And I think the moment in Chronicle that made me fall in love with the film, flaws and all, was when they first start to learn how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen films like this before. I mean, even just the superhero films. Oh, I can fly now. Okay, whatever. I have to get over it because we have a script and a plot to move with. No, the film really does linger on the exhilaration these kids are feeling
yeah.
of actually what it would feel like to actually levitate off the ground. And that was one of the first times I actually felt a thrill watching characters do that. It was, I don't know. Yeah.
It was certainly tangible.
Yeah. It's certainly tangible.
And it was certainly cool to watch them certainly jump in the air and they're flying in the sky. Yeah, I agree. That was when Chronicle was able to use its believability and its realism, or that it was going for.
Yes.
To kind of offer a new experience to viewers.
Yeah.
One that was exciting. A new experience, but one that was actually exciting because we felt a part of it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And so would you say there is one film that you would hold as your favorite found footage film at this point?
Well, I guess I've been waiting. I like Cloverfield. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I remember being there Friday night, it came out, and being a part of the event of Cloverfield.
Sure.
And the mystery of it afterward, the mystery of it before, the mm-hmm. all the websites and the Slusho t-shirts and all the inside jokes and everything. Yeah. And that was quite a exciting experience. And that's the thing with these found footage films, they can be really exciting because mm-hmm. they're so immersive.
Mm-hmm.
But then they can lose the excitement with the story and so forth. But I'd say the better ones I've seen are Chronicle and Paranormal Activity.
Mm-hmm.
I would be curious to see more, especially the newer ones. But I think it's also curious how the newer ones have certainly started to show some wear and tear or some selloutness of it. Like Project X is a very interesting example of the cool kids ruining the party.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a whole rant about Project X, but I want to
sure. Yeah. No, but that's so true. And again goes to the marketing as well, where it's the audience participation and it makes it an audience participation experience. You feel connected to the product mm-hmm. before it happens, and it's a brilliant marketing gimmick. And so I guess the film that we'll be on the lookout for, the independent film, is that's the next kind of found footage thing, is an independent film called V/H/S, which I guess would just be VHS. But it's a horror anthology, different approaches to found footage, many different vignettes. And two of the directors, Ty West is one of them, who's becoming a big name in independent horror with The Innkeepers and House of the Devil. And his friend and fellow filmmaker Joe Swanberg, also Chicago-based filmmaker. So they have two entries. And it got really good response on the festival circuit. And I think Magnolia is picking it up.
Yes, Magnolia does have it. Yeah,
so that's the one we'll be looking at. Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you very much
for being a guest on the show.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it. And you can thank check you. Out all of Nick's recent reviews and interviews at thescorecardreview.com. And you can check out all of my recent reviews and interviews at hollywoodchicago.com. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.